you like audiobooks or audio shows, check out a free trial of Audible. Just click the link in the description.
You are listening to Mind Shock. This is your host, Bruce McGuire.
And Michael Powers.
And Sid Irwin.
And we are back for Time Travel Part 2. The paradoxes of time travel. If you haven't checked out Time Travel Part 1, The Nature of Time Travel, check that out. It is probably the most comprehensive overview of time travel in existence on the interwebs. Would you guys agree?
So far.
I'm not sure.
What have you seen that was better, Maxwell? Come on, man. Do you think there's nobody out there with a better memory, better recall, better articulation than Maxwell Powers?
Well, I'm not sure if I ever heard a time travel podcast just really specializing in that topic. So,
yeah, Mind Shock is a pioneer of many topics. So once again, if you like the podcast, you can donate to our PayPal. Just check the link in the description. Make sure you subscribe to the channel. Hit the bell for notifications. If you like the video, hit the like button. Feel free to share it across social media platforms. Any questions, comments, theories, thoughts of any kind, just drop them in the comment section. And you could also check us out on Twitter, Reddit, Patreon, and make sure to like our Facebook page as well. Okay. So, Maxwell, I'm sure you said you really like time travel movies, so this is a favorite topic of yours. You just didn't seem to pay too close attention on the first podcast, but are you kind of all caught up now on the mechanics or the different theories of how the mechanics of time travel could work?
I don't remember, but I don't remember the technicalities like really.
We went over the classic grandfather paradox of how if you go back in time. So we'll be going into a few different paradoxes and we'll be getting into the specifics of different paradoxes. And of course, Sid Irwin, the former Mensa member who won't tell us what happened with Mensa. Did they kick you out or did you just like stop going? Like, what was the deal? What's the deal, Sid?
As far as I can tell, with my fellow Mensa compatriots, we just didn't see eye to eye.
Are you saying your IQ was too high for them and they were just jealous and that caused problems?
No, just that my IQ was too high for them and it just felt like they were just wasting my time holding me back. So I felt I needed to move on. That's all.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I'm sure you'll be in good company with Maxwell Powers.
Sid Irwin's quite modest.
Yes, indeed. This is actually an article from Frisian.com, which is very, very interesting. It opens with a quote from Revelation 10:5-6, or 10:5-6. I'm sure Maxwell knows his Bible passages. You got it, Maxwell?
Nah, I got nothing, man. I got nothing on the Bible verse.
And the angel swore that time will be no more. It's kind of ominous, isn't it?
Wait, what the hell does that mean?
Well, the angel is saying that there will be no more time.
It could be a matter of perspective. It could be ominous in a sense of potentially, if you think as if it's the end of all time, that means it might be the end of all existence. Or it could be the end of all time and things might have just simply frozen in place from there on. Or just that without time, certain things are no longer affected.
What if time is some kind of artificial construct by the intelligent designer or designers or software program of the universe that can be turned on or off? Kind of like anti-aliasing in a video game.
Well, it definitely it's funny you mention video games. Now I can think about is Star Ocean Till the End of Time.
I'm not familiar with that one.
Well, essentially, the plot ended up being exactly what you just described.
Wow, that's awesome.
No.
I gotta have a new catchphrase. Like, that would make a good video game
copy Maxwell Powers.
Yeah, Maxwell's got his, that would make a good movie. I should start, that would make a good video game. So basically, they just switched it off, kind of like real-time physics or something in a video game.
That would be awesome. I mean.
So this is how it goes. Robert Heinlein's 1941 story, By His Bootstraps, begins with the narrator writing in a philosophy thesis that time travel is impossible because time, in Immanuel Kant's terms, is only empirically real and does not exist independently among things in themselves. The narrator is then suddenly surprised to find two different versions of himself arriving from the future with conflicting warnings and promises about what he can do. Traveling to the future, he meets an older man who repeats the promises, but whom he ends up distrusting. After some confusion, back in the present, he obtains some supplies and returns to the future to a period significantly earlier when he would met the older man, intending to contest the future with him. Eventually, however, it turns out that he himself is the older man, and his future is in fact Pace Immanuel Kant secured. A paradox of time travel arises in relation to this story. The narrator does indeed set himself up by his bootstraps. His present and future selves all interact with each other to produce the events. The paradoxical nature of this comes down to the case of a notebook that was provided to the narrator by the older man in the future. It contained a vocabulary of the language that was spoken by people in the future. The narrator learns the language and, as the book wears out over the years, copies it over into a notebook he had fetched from the present. This notebook, as it happens, is the very one he, as the older man, then provides to his other self. He is therefore the same person who learns the knowledge from the notebook and put the knowledge into the notebook in the first place. The vocabulary is a certain list of items arranged in a certain way, was thus compiled by no one whatsoever. The knowledge exists in a closed temporal loop and is in an important sense uncaused or uncreated. The narrator himself notes that there is something peculiar about this. Peculiar indeed, a very similar paradox allowed by the possibility of the same kind of temporal loop can become a reductio ad absurdum for time travel. We see such a paradox in the 1980 movie Somewhere in Time, starring Christopher Reeve and Jane Seymour. Are those your favorite actors, Maxwell?
But wait, Christopher Reeve, you said?
And Jane Seymour, yes.
James Seymour.
Dr. Quinn, Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman.
Oh, yeah. I read about her, but she was like House on the Prairie lady, right? Some
Little House on the Prairie?
I don't know. I think that's where. That's where the Dr. Seymour, or whatever it was, that she played.
Okay.
Wait, what?
I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't know who the hell she is. But she's like, I just remember a photo of her. I think she's pretty. She's really pretty, long hair and shit. And I just remember her with holding a freaking basket on top of a hill in a fucking, like a cabin. That's all I remember.
I remember some guy throwing axes. That's all I remember about that one. All right. So, have you guys seen that movie, by the way? Somewhere in Time?
I have not, but it sounds interesting, and I might put that on my list.
Yeah, you like time travel movies. I haven't seen it. Sid, have you seen it?
Yeah, put on a...
No, I have not.
As a young man, Reeve encounters an old woman who gives him a watch. Later, he becomes obsessed with the painting of a woman in an old 19th century hotel, actually filmed in the beautiful Mackinac Island in Michigan. He decides that he must meet that woman, and he thinks it is possible because of the theory of a professor he had for physics. The professor thinks that it is possible to will oneself back in time as long as what one carries along is not anachronistic for that time. I haven't heard that one before. Have you heard that one before, Maxwell, said that you could just go back in time if you feel like it?
I have to look up anachronistic. I don't know. Is that like not...
Not fitting for the time period. Like, so if you bring your iPhone back to the Wild West, for some reason it won't work, according to this professor in this movie. So if you're wearing clothes for the time period and you don't bring anything that conflicts, apparently your willpower alone is enough to do that. Have you heard about this,
That's pretty cool. So I only have something here, a book from the past. I think it was published in 1936, so I can hold it, but I have to be butt naked because everything can't be from the present or future. So
what year was
it? Not from the future. 1936.
Why don't you just wear a suit?
That's funny.
Sid, have you ever heard of this theory? You could just will yourself back in time?
No, I've never heard of it. Though I do remember one show called The Misfits where the person did have the ability to transport his consciousness back in time. That's about as far as I can go.
When you say consciousness, so not his body?
Not his body, just his consciousness cool. into his previous body at a different point in time.
That's pretty interesting. I haven't heard of that. I've heard of remote viewing going back in time, but not your consciousness actually inhabiting another body as a vessel. That's pretty interesting.
I didn't know remote viewing can go back in time.
There's a subset of remote viewing. You could basically view any event, past, present, or future.
Okay. Huh. No kidding.
Yeah. Well, this isn't quite exactly time travel. That's more of a remote.
That's kind of cool too. Because like I was thinking, like I don't know, doing some remote viewing exercise with Maura Murray or something. I'm gonna solve that case with remote viewing skills.
There's actually quite a few people already working on the remote viewings with some. We're gonna actually do a remote viewing podcast on the Maura Murray case as well.
Oh, sweet!
Yeah,
I'm gonna be doing remote viewing while we're doing it.
All right, cool. So you'll be able to contribute. You'll be able to contribute to the actual remote viewing. Okay. Reeve, so in the movie, Reeve outfits himself for the 19th century and actually succeeds in willing himself back into it. He meets the woman in the picture played by Jane Seymour, and he is able to win her heart so that she returns the love he felt ever since seeing her painting. He gives her the watch that he had acquired many years before from the old woman. Then, as their mutual happiness seems assured, Reeve discovers a penny from the 20th century in his suit, and the anachronism vaults him back into the present. He is unable to endure separation from his beloved, stars himself to death in his hotel room, and apparently is reunited with her in the hereafter. All right, this doesn't make any sense at all. I'm not sure I even want to watch this movie now, because hold on a second. If you're unaware of the anachronism, it doesn't count. So if you leave your iPhone in your back pocket and you forget it's there, you can travel back in time. But as soon as you become aware of it, you go back to the present. But then why doesn't he just will himself back in time without any anachronism? Or is this a one-shot deal? Is this every human only gets one chance to go back in time? And if they do it without being anachronistic, then it's all okay and they can stay back in time? This doesn't make any sense. Sid, does this make any sense to you?
To me, from what I can tell, just guys have seen some other things talk about time travel since where, actually, even The Flash, that's what I was watching. They had spoke that, I guess in one theory set that you could travel back in time and that there's only certain key points in time that matter, while there are other smaller subsequent points that are irrelevant to honestly affect the timelines, so it eventually just smooths itself back out. So as long as, I guess, yes, if you do know anachronistic events, like let's say, you know, instead of JFK getting killed, you end up saving him, then yeah, things should be fine.
Yeah, but if you bring something, according to this movie, you can't bring anything with you that's anachronistic.
It is anachronistic, and you shouldn't be able to bring anything with you.
But he brought a penny, but he didn't discover it. So only when he became aware of the penny was he vaulted back into the present. Does that make any sense at all?
That doesn't make any sense.
And then he starves himself to death in his hotel room. Why doesn't he just will himself back in time again to see her? I'm not sure I want to watch the movie now. But anyway, okay. So the old woman who gave him the watch in his youth was, of course, Jane Seymour's character, lived to a ripe old age just to see him again. The watch, therefore, was obtained by Reeve from Seymour and was obtained by Seymour from Reeve. In a closed temporal loop, like the knowledge in the notebook in Heinlein's story, the watch is uncreated. But this is impossible. The watch is an impossible object. It violates the second law of thermodynamics, the law of entropy. If time travel makes that watch possible, then time travel itself is impossible. The watch indeed must be absolutely identical to itself in the 19th and 20th centuries, since Reeve carries it with him from the future instantaneously into the past and bestows it on Seymour. The watch, however, cannot be identical to itself, since all the years in which it is in the possession of Seymour and then Reeve, it will wear in the normal manner. Its entropy will increase. The watch carried back by Reeve will be more worn than the watch that would have been acquired by Seymour. The reductio ad absurdum created by the watch can be fixed in a couple of ways. First, we might think that entropy could be reversed by time travel, so that forms of matter would be restored to the state that they would have been at the earliest period. But this will not do, since Reeve himself would then be restored to the state his manner was in the 19th century, which, wherever it whatever it was, would not be in the form of Christopher Reeve. Second, we might think that time travel puts one in an alternate universe. In some universe, the watch is manufactured and bought in the ordinary way, and the older Jane Seymour, for whatever reason, gives it to the young Christopher Reeve. He goes back in time to an alternate universe where Seymour did not acquire an unmanufactured watch and gives her his. Then she gives it to him later, and he returns to a different universe where Seymour does not buy a watch, but acquires a somewhat more worn watch from him. The temporal loop thus generates a spiral of alternative universes. Unfortunately, it would require a spiral of an infinite number of alternate universes, as each watch in a particular universe is returned to a new universe where it can exist in its increasingly worn state. In some universe, the watch would disintegrate while in Seymour's or Reeve's keeping and need to be discarded. But Reeve would keep returning to the past unless the watch turned out to be some causal factor in his falling in love with the picture. What do you guys think?
That's one of the best of watch.
Maxwell, did you follow all that?
No.
It's very simple. If he gives her the watch when he travels back in time, and then the older Jane Seymour gives him the watch when he's young, the watch should be in different states of wear, like wear and tear, just from existing, being carried around, oxidation, whatever. So it can't be the same, right? So it's kind of like, that's paradoxical. That's what I just went over.
I see.
Which would be true.
So what do you think?
Hold on. Let me get this straight. So So Christopher Reeve got this freaking watch from an old woman, right? When he was an adult, right?
No, when he was young.
He was 10 or some shit like that. He grabs a watch and then he travels to the future, or like what happened? Or did he grow
up? Well,
he
lives his life, years pass, then he travels back and gives her the watch.
Why would he give it back?
Wait.
Why would he give it back? I don't get it.
Wait, what do you mean?
Okay, so he was a young kid, he got a watch, and then he grows up and he, you know, he's holding this watch. And then he travels back in time to give her back the watch.
Well, he just gives her the watch. It doesn't really matter why. Like, he gives her, like, a souvenir, a gift, whatever. I haven't seen the movie. Maybe she knows. Well, I don't know what it's irrelevant. Why he gives her the watch is completely irrelevant to everything we're talking about. Because there's X amount of years of wear and tear on the watch. He gives her the watch. Then as an old, then he goes, he gets booted back to his present because he had an extra penny. He had a penny that was anachronistic. So Jane Seymour, whatever, as an older woman, she gives the young version of Reeve that same watch. Okay. Why the motivations of anybody giving anybody a watch is completely irrelevant to the whole point of this. Do you not see how
what's the point? Your point is the deterioration of the watch should be.
Does that make time travel impossible if the watch is in the same state at all times? Because the watch did not have more wear and tear, therefore it's paradoxical. It's always exactly the same during the transference.
Yeah, it's messed up. It's like inconsistent with
paradox. Yes.
Yeah. Or. Yeah. The entire theory behind how this whole movie is supposed to be based off is entirely wrong, and the watch itself is a time-traveling device.
Oh, I like that. You should be a screenwriter, Sid.
I try.
Huh. That would make sense, wouldn't it? You know, it would be weird, because we don't know the exact years here, since he gave her the watch, did she use the watch? I mean, I don't know the exact years, because it says as a young man she gives him the watch, so there seems to be a lot off with that movie. But anyway, let's focus on the paradoxes. Every instance of time travel generating an infinite number of alternate universes might be thought to violate Occam's razor, especially since the idea that an alternate universe could be generated in the first place has disturbing consequences for the metaphysics of identity. What does it mean if there are an infinite number of each of the characters all facing a universe slightly different? Simplicity and common sense rebel against such principles. Although serious versions of such metaphysics have been produced to deal with quantum mechanics and multiple real universes were proposed by the philosopher David Lewis to explain possibility and necessity. After Sal Kripke used Leibniz's idea of possible universes to produce a quantified version of modal logic. But without them, time travel that would allow for the sort of temporal loop in which the paradoxical and impossible watch of somewhere in time becomes possible is itself impossible. While the notebook of By His Bootstraps and the watch of somewhere in time produces paradoxes for the concept of time travel, nothing is as simple or stark as the grandfather paradox. Thus, you go back in time and murder your grandfather, take your choice, before he has any children. Thus, one of your parents never would have been born, and then you would have never been born. But if you had never been born, then you would not exist to go back in time and murder your grandfather. The possible murderer of your grandfather is removed from existence by the very act of murder, an act that now cannot happen. But then, if it doesn't happen, you do exist, and you can go back in time and murder your grandfather. This begins to sound like the liar paradox, where if a sentence is true, it's false, and if it's false, it's true. You neither can nor cannot murder your grandfather. So the liar paradox, which is, let's go over that real quick. So the statement, this sentence is false. If that sentence is false, then what it says is true. Therefore, it is true. Maxwell, did you follow that?
No, not really.
This sentence is false. Repeat that, Maxwell.
This sentence is false.
Okay. If what you just said is false, then what it says is true, right? Therefore, it is true?
Yeah.
But how could it be true? If you just said this sentence is false. So if you're lying about
that, your claim to it being false is inaccurate.
No. Let's say for the sake of argument that you're lying. Let's say you're lying, you're trying to lie to me, and you're saying, this sentence is false, trying to trick me.
It's still true because it's apart from what you're saying.
Okay, if the sentence is true, then what it says is false. Therefore, it is false. So this was actually introduced and debated in Hellenistic philosophy, and at least one person has committed suicide because of this liar paradox, because of thinking about it.
Is that factual, or did he?
Yes,
is that
no,
like
that's
a, it's like a tale.
No, there's a footnote here about
what's the dude's name that killed himself? Got to be some kind of like language that we use his name to refer to this type of behavior. His name is probably suicide or some shit.
So you're saying maybe he defined his first suicide in all existence.
Or suicide or some shit like that.
I don't think so. But
Suicide or some shit.
Sid, are you following this? This sentence is false. So what happens if you're lying to me? If you're trying to lie to me and say the sentence is false?
It's true.
But if it's
but
true,
it's,
then
it's
what
irrelevant, it's irrelevant if you're like it's irrelevant if you're lying or not. Like what you say is a sentence.
All right, forget about motivations in lying. If let's say you think it's true, but it's actually false. Like we're discussing two possibilities. The sentence could either be true or it could be false, right? So if it's true, like we could swap it out for 1 + 1 = 2, 1 + 1 = 5. It doesn't matter what.
But anything you say as a sentence, whether the content is projecting to be false, is irrelevant because it's a sentence.
Now let's think about it as an equation. Like you say, 1 + 1 = 2, 1 + 1 = 5. One of them is true. One of them is false. We could discuss if it's true or if it's false. We're doing that with this sentence. This sentence is false. Let's discuss the sentence. Either it's true or it's false, right? So if the sentence is false, then what it says is true. Therefore, it is true.
I just look at it as a true sentence. That's all I see. I don't know what the other ones are.
So 1 + 1 = 5 is a true equation? I mean, it's not. It's not accurate. We're talking about, if I say you're wearing whatever, you're wearing a blue shirt, you're actually wearing a red shirt. Okay, there's a truth. It's a sentence. You're wearing a blue shirt. But if it's actually red, then it's a non-true sentence, right? I think you're missing the whole point here, Maxwell. The content of this, you're focusing on the fact that it's an actual sentence. Yes, of course, but that's not the point of any of this. The point is the content is true or false. So let's say it's true, then what it says is false. Therefore, it's false. That's the whole paradox. I don't know if Sid, can you think of a way to explain this to Maxwell?
I just went back in time and murdered it myself. And now I'm having a conversation with you.
Now I'm even more confused.
Wait, so that, like if Sid gave that example, that means he will travel in time sometime in the future since he's talking with us or something.
Oh, man.
Because he's going to go back in time and kills himself. So he kills himself as his age today, but like somewhere like 15 minutes from now, he travels back in time to kill himself.
Okay, hold on a second. Okay, there's a little explanation here. So the peculiarity of the liar paradox, if we switch its assertion from false to true, the contradictions generated by the paradox disappear. But we are left with a further question. Okay, we might think if it's true, it's true, and if it's false, it's false. That is the case with any non-paradoxical proposition. If it's raining today, it's raining. If it's not raining, it's not raining. Big deal. But then we are left to wonder, is the anti-liar true? Or is it false? How do we determine that? Well, ordinarily, we look to the cognitive ground of the proposition. To know it if it is raining, we look out the window. But both the liar and anti-liar statements only refer to themselves. Therefore, if they are either true or false, there must be something about them that makes them true or false. We find lots of things like that in logic, where the sentences that cannot be false are tautologies, and where the sentences that cannot be true are contradictions. This bothered Hellenistic Stoics because of the principle of the excluded middle, which is that propositions are either true or false. It doesn't look like the liar can be either true or false, since each one even implies the other, which just drove them bananas. However, notice that without generating any contradictions, we have the same problem with the anti-liar. How can it be either true or false? If it is self-referential, which means that its truth can only be determined by its own form or meaning, but the form or proposition can determine its own truth or falsehood only if it is either a tautology or a contradiction. Neither the liar nor the anti-liar is either a tautology or a contradiction. And the content of the proposition is simply to refer to itself. The anti-liar, as much as the liar, violates the principle of the excluded middle. So it is actually the anti-liar that exposes the issue without the distractions of the contradictions generated by the liar. So the problem is with that. Indeed, there is nothing internally or externally, form or meaning, that provides a ground for truth of the anti-liar. It is though we are given a proposition, P, and asked whether it is true or false. Well, we can't say, and our objections will be that we cannot determine truth or falsehood without knowing its meaning. Logicians say an interpretation. But its meaning is merely self-reference with nothing else. In a sense, this means that P consists of nothing but P with a predication of truth, i.e. TP, just as the liar is a predication of falsehood, i.e. FP. That is not much help, but a predication of truth can be added or removed as well. So strictly speaking, P remains without meaning. It has no semantic content beyond a redundant logical form, and it is no more paradoxical than any other misinterpreted P, such as is used in logical symbolism all the time. In fact, since Aristotle. So our answer to both paradoxes may be that they actually have no meaning, and so cannot have a true value, unless we have a three-value logic that adds unknown or undetermined to truth and false. That does indeed violate the excluded middle, but then it may be necessary, for instance, in quantum mechanics. It is also, in fact, the practice of logic where uninterpreted symbols like P are used. Unless they are tautologies or contradictions, their truth value is undetermined until interpreted. So that's actually a very interesting point. If you were following Maxwell, we have an unknown quantity, an unknown entity, or an unknown law at play. So if the watch can remain in perfect condition, is it due to some kind of energy that has to do with time travel that we simply don't know about?
I see.
That's an interesting take.
An unknown variable. So anyway, back to what this guy was saying, you can or cannot murder your grandfather. We discussed that as well, where if it exists, we went pretty deep in that in the previous episode. You can check that out. We solved that a few different ways, but this could be fixed up again with multiple universes. You don't just travel in time. You are leaving the universe in which you exist and enter a universe where your actions mean that you will not exist. No problem. The original universe is not altered. However, this does mean that there actually is not true time travel. There is only travel between alternate universes where you can enter the alternative universe at a random point in time. Does this falsify the premise? I expect so, but the simpler move is then to forget the alternative universes and just deny that there can be time travel. The paradox is resolved without all the paradoxes inherent in the theory of multiple universes itself. Each of these paradoxes involve a kind of loop in time. The knowledge in By His Bootstraps circulates from past to future and back without having an actual causal origin external to the loop. There is something peculiar about that, but it doesn't seem to violate any logic or laws of nature. The watch in Somewhere in Time, similarly, is uncreated, but it does violate the laws of nature. For its existence through time on the loop involves wear that will not be undone by its transport from the future to the past. Once again, do we know that for sure? If there's infinite undiscovered laws of physics that are somehow affected or negated by time travel, then that could explain it. Anyway, the watch at the point of transfer in the future cannot be the same watch at the point of arrival in the past, since the watch in the past becomes the watch in the future through many years of operation of entropy. In the grandfather paradox, the problem with the loop in time becomes more acute. The violation moves from being one of the laws of nature into the realm of actual logic, albeit the logic of the basic nature of causality. Thus, the third noble truth of Buddhism is that you remove the effect by removing the cause. Removing the grandfather thus removes the effect, namely the murderer himself. Here we have not a continuity along the loop of the linguistic knowledge of the watch, but a discontinuity. The causal chain is broken rather than continued. This is why we get a phenomena similar to the liar paradox. The existence of the murderer makes the murder possible, but the murderer makes the murderer and the murder impossible. With Occam's razor, the simplest fix is the denial of time travel. Kant's theory of time may go unrefuted after all. And once again, we have Occam's razor being applied at least somewhat inaccurately, because once again, it states that if both explanations adequately explain, the simpler one should be used. And there's virtually no scenarios where two different theories perfectly equally explain something. So if the more complex theory explains it better, that should be used once again. And then, of course, I went over actually in our Bigfoot Skeptics podcast, we went over Occam's razor as well pretty extensively. For those that haven't checked that episode out, check that out, because Occam's razor, nature doesn't even work along Occam's razor, because nature is just incredibly complex. So anyway, that's a brief outline of some of those paradoxes. I'll do a quick rundown from astronomytrek.com on 5 bizarre paradoxes of time travel. One quick point about what I just read, though. I don't think we discussed this before. If it's all true and there's a single timeline, did we talk about this in the previous episode? If it's all true and you do go back in time, murder your grandfather, that all happened. You really did go back in time, and then now neither one of you exists, and the single universe timeline continues.
We did talk about that.
What? Did we talk about that?
I believe we had talked about that.
Oh, I don't even remember. I'm turning into Maxwell. Maxwell, do you remember that?
What's that? Very heavily questioned it, at the very least.
Huh. Yeah, I don't
know. What are you guys talking about?
Why didn't you listen?
I lost track.
Whether or not there's a multiverse that's created as you shift through the timeline and change certain actions, or whether or not there's simply a single timeline, so whether or not you go forward or backwards, whatever occurs within it changes that you may have caused that are outside the norm of the actual continuity will still have occurred in that said timeline, and it simply therefore continues to move forward with those new actions in place.
So the single universe occurs without the grandfather ever existing, or without you existing, or the murder ever happening, even though it did.
You know, then
that's so it. You mean like say pretty much like shifting, shifting universes as you time travel?
No, oh, no. Opposite of that.
So for a single timeline, if you go back,
so there's only one single timeline, like no, the opposite of multiple universes. Yeah.
So instead of killing yourself and then you don't exist, if you go back and kill your grandfather, then everything from that moment ceases to exist. So you've wrecked everything.
You no longer exist.
And some theorists say like if you succeed in doing that, the whole paradox can end the planet and the world, or like,
well, no, there is no, well, there is no paradox if that happens, because it all happened.
Yeah, and it's what it is.
Oh wait, but you wouldn't exist or some shit like that. Like,
yes, correct. After that, but you did exist before that, and you really did go back in time and kill your grandfather.
Yeah.
All right. So moving on to these different to more paradoxes on astronomytrek.com. There is nothing in Einstein's theories of relativity to rule out time travel, although the very notion of traveling to the past violates one of the most fundamental premises of physics, that of causality. With the laws of cause and effect out the window, there naturally arises a number of inconsistencies associated with time travel. And listed here are some of those paradoxes which have given both scientists and time travel movie buffs alike more than a few sleepless nights over the years. The time travel paradoxes which follow fall in two broad categories. One, closed causal loops such as the predestination paradox and the bootstrap paradox, which involve a self-existing time loop in which cause and effect run in a repeating circle, but is also internally consistent with the timeline's history. Two, consistency paradoxes such as the grandfather paradox and other similar variants such as the Hitler paradox, the Polchinski paradox, which generates a number of timeline inconsistencies related to the possibility of altering the past. All right, let's move on. Paradox 1, predestination paradox. A predestination paradox occurs when the actions of a person traveling back in time becomes part of past events and may ultimately cause the event he is trying to prevent to take place. This results in a temporal causality loop in which event 1 in the past influences event 2 in the future, time travel to the past, which then causes event 1 to occur. With this circular loop of events ensuring that history is not altered by the time traveler, and that any attempts to stop something from happening in the past will simply lead to the cause itself instead of stopping it. This paradox suggests that things are always destined to turn out the same way, and whatever has happened must happen. I just got another mind shock from reading that. Did you follow all that, Maxwell?
No, I didn't.
Let's say something bad happens, so then somehow you're able to go back in time and you try to prevent it, but in your trying to prevent it, that's what causes it in the first place, or causes you to want to go back in time. So it's like a loop.
I see.
It's very personal. I do understand that, only because I think I recommended this before for anyone who is interested in our discussions about time travel. They should watch this one show called Continuum, which is essentially all about time travel, and this scenario was one scenario that did play out.
Well, I just got a thought though. So you guys ready for a mind shock?
Mm-hmm.
What if, so let's say, so some people think Earth is kind of like an organism. It protects itself either by making diseases to cull humans, or in various ways it protects itself and its own existence.
Correct. Right.
What if the universe is the same way? So, what if this loop, this endless loop, is a safety mechanism built into the fabric of the universe for any potential time travelers trying to mess with it? Like, it's kind of like a safe defense, like a self-defense mechanism of the universe to protect against time travelers screwing up the natural flow of the universe.
That would be interesting.
Maxwell, did you follow that?
No, can you repeat that?
How come you pay attention when I say it the second time, but not the third or fourth, but never the first, or almost never the first?
I don't know.
What if the universe, it's a self-defense mechanism? Whenever somebody goes back in time, it creates that loop so that whatever caused them, whatever event they're trying to stop happens anyway, so then they go back to stop it. So the time travelers are always stuck in their little loop so they can't mess with the greater universe, and then the non-time travelers are free to live in the universe naturally, as it's supposed to be. I mean, it's kind of almost like a quarantine. It's almost like a universe quarantine for time travelers. Did you follow that, Maxwell?
I'm thinking about it.
But now, is it a negative or a positive event? Would it affect either one?
Well, I would assume it doesn't matter because the universe wants to function the way it functions. So anything messing with it is not good.
If it's predestined. Okay, I can accept that. So, I'm sorry, Maxwell.
What were you saying, Maxwell?
I'm still not following. So if I, like, time travel backwards.
To change an event.
So I change an event.
But then something happens which causes the event. You're stuck in your loop because the reason to change the event is what caused you to time travel, so you're always looped. Do you remember anything from part one where we talk about, like, remember the girl in the bedroom and her older version comes to her and says, you should do this instead. And then she does, but then if
that. Oh, yeah, yeah, like the career changer.
Yeah, person, yeah, like
she,
so whatever.
She wants to be a lawyer or something like
so
that.
So whatever causes a loop, it doesn't matter what it is. But if a time traveler messes with something, they go to their younger self and they tell them to do something instead. Then when they grow up, but that time traveler messed it up. And if a closed loop, if that's what it is, that closed loop of they go back. So that event of going back caused their other self to go back to their previous self. So it's like they're trapped in a loop, right? Are you following?
Yeah, yeah. I think they've made movies like that where it just...
They've made a whole bunch. But no, the point is, if the universe is trying to protect itself, time travelers are not natural to the universe. So it creates these loops as a way to quarantine time travelers so they can do their thing in their loop without truly affecting anything in the rest of the world, in the rest of the universe.
I see.
It's like a quarantine.
Yeah. Quarantine the time travelers because they're fucking...
Well, let's continue here. So, sound
company... But what if the time traveler is technically a part of the natural order that had to occur?
Well, then that disproves my theory.
That'd be interesting, though.
So, well, actually, not necessarily. This goes with your theory. If it's a time traveler that's doing something beneficial for the universe, maybe it's allowed and the causal loop doesn't occur. And then the bad ones, kind of like an immune system, it's gonna focus on the pathogen. It's going to want to kill the pathogens, but it leaves the beneficial, everything beneficial. So what if in the loop,
the time traveler decides to do the opposite, which is good, then he gets out of the loop?
Maybe. In this new theory that we're discussing now, yes.
It could occur.
That's cool.
Oh,
you're a script writer, man.
All right. So, sound complicated? Imagine that your lover dies in a hit-and-run car accident, and you travel back in time to save her from her fate, only to find that on your way to the car accident, you are the one who accidentally runs her over. Your attempt to change the past has therefore resulted in a predestination paradox. One way of dealing with this type of paradox is to assume that the version of events you have experienced are already built into a self-consistent version of reality, and that by trying to alter the past, you will only end up fulfilling your role in creating an event in history, not altering. So that's what we discussed. Okay, cinema treatment. In The Time Machine 2002, have you seen that, Maxwell?
Say that title again.
The Time Machine from 2002?
No, I haven't.
It was pretty good, actually.
Is that supposed to be the one based on H.G. Wells' book?
Yes.
Was it like a chair that fucking spins around and shit, like a marble?
It was directed by Simon Wells.
What is his relation?
Was that his grandson?
Could be.
He's the great-grandson of H.G. Wells.
Oh, wow.
Got my time a little off. All right. So, in that movie, Dr. Alexander Hartigan witnesses his fiance being killed by a mugger, leading him to build a time machine to travel back in time to save her from her fate. His subsequent attempts to save her fail, though, leading him to conclude that I could come back 1,000 times and see her die 1,000 ways. After then traveling centuries into the future to see if a solution has been found to the temporal problem, Hartigan is told by the Uber Morlock, "You build your time machine because of Emma's death. If she had lived, it would never have existed. So how could you use your machine to go back and save her? You are the inescapable result of your tragedy, just as I, the inescapable result of you." That's kind of deep.
That's extremely deep. I like it. But that's right there. It goes with this whole concept of that before, cause and effect.
Yeah, I don't even remember that from the movie. I don't remember that line. That's a pretty deep line. Other movies are 12 Monkeys, Time Crimes, The Time Traveler's Wife, and Predestination. Have you seen all those, Maxwell?
No.
For someone who loves time travel movies, you really haven't seen a lot of time travel movies.
I saw the Time Traveler's Wife, all the Back to the Futures.
Oh, okay.
What else? I have seen more.
Looper.
Oh, yeah, Looper.
Did you watch Time Cop yet? We were talking about Time Cop on the previous podcast.
Oh, Time Cop. Yeah, I wanted to see that.
Yeah, you can check that out.
That was like with the only theory that's like kind of messed up, right?
That's the same matter can't occupy the same space at the same time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Thinking about it now, though, with the time machine, more than likely with the way this is set up, this must mean that everything that's occurring must be within a single timeline.
Yes.
Just based on given information of what's being said, for the fact that cause and effect has to occur in order to create the time machine for again.
Once again, there seem to be laws governing time travel that we don't know about, which would make sense because, like, let's say you do come up with a time machine. What makes you think you'd just be able to go back in time with the existing law? Like, there's infinite laws of physics that are not discovered yet. Something that's that drastic, why wouldn't it be affected by all these countless other laws that we don't know about? It's kind of weird to think about it from that side of it. But let's move on to the bootstrap paradox. A bootstrap paradox is a type of paradox in which an object, person, or piece of information sent back in time results in an infinite loop where the object has no discernible origin and exists without ever being created. It is also known as the ontological paradox, as ontology is a branch of philosophy concerned with the nature of being or existence. Information. George Lucas, traveling back in time and giving himself the scripts for the Star Wars movies, which he then goes on to direct and gain great fame for, would create a bootstrap paradox involving information, as the scripts have no true point of creation or origin. Person. A bootstrap paradox involving a person would be, say, a 20-year-old male time traveler who goes back 21 years, meets a woman, has an affair, and returns home 3 months later without knowing the woman was pregnant. Her child grows up to be the 20-year-old time traveler who travels back 21 years through time, meets a woman, and so on. American science fiction writer Robert Heinlein wrote a strange short story involving a sexual paradox in his 1959 classic, All You Zombies. These ontological paradoxes imply that the future, present, and past are not defined, thus giving scientists an obvious problem on how to then pinpoint the origin of anything. A word customarily referring to the past, but now rendered meaningless. Further questions arise as to how the object data was created and by whom. Nevertheless, Einstein's field equations allow for the possibility of closed time loops, with Kip Thorne, the first theoretical physicist, to recognize traversable wormholes and backwards time travel as being theoretically possible under certain conditions. So some movies, as an example of this, are Somewhere in Time, which we discussed, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, the Terminator movies, and Time Lapse from 2014. I haven't seen Time Lapse. Have you seen Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, Maxwell? Is that your favorite movie?
I've only seen clips of it. Some of it. It looks interesting. I haven't seen the whole movie. I should watch it.
It's a classic. Sid, have you seen
it? Bill and Ted, right? You said?
Yeah.
Like they go in a fucking phone booth and fucking they meet like Abraham Lincoln and shit.
Sid, have you seen it?
Yes, I have, though. It has been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while for me, too. Quite a while.
Yeah, that's what made Keanu Reeves famous, I think. I don't know. I could be wrong.
And we have the grandfather paradox, which we already discussed. And then let's discuss the let's kill Hitler paradox. Similar to the grandfather paradox, which paradoxically prevents your own birth. The killing Hitler paradox erases your own reason for going back in time to kill him. Furthermore, while killing Grandpa might have a limited butterfly effect, killing Hitler would have far-reaching consequences for everyone in the world, even if only for the fact you studied him in school. The paradox itself arises from the idea that if you were successful, then there would be no reason to time travel in the first place. If you killed Hitler, then none of his actions would trickle down through history and cause you to want to make this attempt.
Which is, must be the same rule that the time machine followed.
Yes. So by far the best treatment for this notion occurred in a Twilight Zone episode called The Cradle of Darkness that sums up the difficulties involved in trying to change history, with another being an episode of Doctor Who called Let's Kill Hitler. You know, for people doing a time travel podcast, I have not seen Doctor Who. Have you guys seen it?
I watched a few episodes.
Maxwell?
I saw a couple. Okay. I don't know. I didn't find it that interesting for some reason.
Sid?
Oh, wait. Is it? Wait, I don't. It was a time travel?
Yeah. Sid.
I don't think I've seen it.
Sid, what's your take on Doctor Who?
Doctor Who, from what I've seen, very little. unlike Maxwell, it does seem interesting to me. Just haven't gotten a chance to dedicate myself to watch the many, many seasons it has.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, way too many. All right, let's go over Polchinski's paradox. So American theoretical physicist Joseph Polchinski proposed a time paradox scenario in which a billiard ball enters a wormhole and emerges out the other end in the past just in time to collide with its younger version and stop it from going in the wormhole in the first place. Polchinski's paradox is taken seriously by physicists as there is nothing in Einstein's general relativity to rule out the possibility of time travel, closed time-like curves, CTCs, or tunnels through space-time. Furthermore, it has the advantage of being based upon the laws of motion without having to refer to the indeterministic concept of free will, and so presents a better research method for scientists to think about the paradox. When Joseph Polchinski proposed the paradox, he had Novikov's self-consistency principle in mind, which basically states that while time travel is possible, time paradoxes are forbidden. However, a number of solutions have been formulated to avoid the inconsistencies Polchinski suggested, which essentially involves the billiard ball delivering a blow which changes its younger version's course, but not enough to stop it from entering the wormhole. This solution is related to the timeline protection hypothesis, which states that a probability distortion would occur in order to prevent a paradox from happening. This also helps explain why if you try to time travel and murder your grandfather, something will always happen to make that impossible, thus preserving a consistent version of history. That's pretty interesting, right?
And that would bring up what you had brought earlier, possibly your theory that what if the universe create these situations like almost like
that was the quarantine theory where it kind of allows the loop and isolates it. This would say it actually prevents it, almost like to continue with our immune system analogy, it almost injects antibodies to kind of adjust the course in order to prevent, in this case, the critical events are the organism. So in order to save the organism, it kind of sends out these ripples to always prevent any kind of critical attack on a critical instance. Maxwell, did you get all that?
Sorry, I missed it.
Maxwell, alarm me. All right, we got to move on to self-fulfilling prophecies. So you know what always bothered me as a kid? Do you remember in some of those myths, especially Greek myths, that there'd be a warning or they'd be warned in whatever way that, I kind of forgot. Was it Oedipus? It was related to the Oedipus myth. Where a king was told to send away his younger son because his son
would come and kill him.
Is that Oedipus?
Yes, that was Oedipus. Okay. Rex.
Oh, got it. All right, cool. Good thing we got Sid Irwin here. He's like the opposite of Maxwell Powers.
that's the reason why the king decided to kill his son to prevent him from, of course, fulfilling said prophecy. But in the end, I think the son was saved by some servant and sent away instead.
Yeah, but if he had just loved his son instead, would his son have killed him? I mean, maybe if that was destined, but maybe not. That's like whenever I read all those myths or other similar myths like that, it used to bother me because it was almost like the fates were messing with people just for the heck of it. almost like a trickster spirit, whereas it wasn't going to happen, but because they told him that, they made it happen by their own hand.
Exactly, because it's trying to appeal it.
Yeah.
Because if anything, the prophecy could have been sent out like this. Prophecy is nothing more than a guarantee of what could happen depending on certain actions that you take, aka fine print that isn't mentioned.
Maxwell, any thoughts on this?
What's that?
Why don't you pretend every single time anybody says anything, it's the second time, repeating just specifically for you. But pretend that's what it is on the first time anybody says anything.
Alright.
I'll try, so that's not a bad one.
No, let me summarize it. So in Greek myths, sometimes a fate or whoever, an old seer, they would tell someone, oh, if your son is going to kill you in the future, and that will be your fate, and that's what will befall you. So the father tries to kill the son, but in those actions lead these ripples that cause the son goes away, and then it comes back around, and the son eventually kills him. Whereas if he ignored that person and just loved his son, would the son want to kill him later?
I see. So, that's where the self-fulfilling prophecy kind of...
It's like, it's almost like in trying to avoid something, you make it happen fast. Like, you make it happen, you just make it happen more. Or it was unavoidable no matter what, in which case it doesn't...
It's the basis of the law of attraction.
So it could be discerned about... It could be a matter of...
What's your question about this?
Well, we were just talking about how it relates to time travel, which I will read according to Astronomy Trek. Our self...
Oh, yeah. That's a good point. It does relate to the time travel thing.
Our self-fulfilling prophecies paradoxes. A self-fulfilling prophecy is only a causality loop when the prophecy is truly known to happen and events in the future cause effects in the past. Otherwise, the phenomena is not so much a paradox as a case of cause and effect. Say, for instance, an authority figure states that something is inevitable, proper, and true, convincing everyone through persuasive style. People, completely convinced through rhetoric, begin to behave as if the prediction were already true and consequently bring it about through their action. This might be seen best by an example where someone convincingly states, high-speed magnetic levitation trains will dominate as the best forms of transportation from the 21st century onward. Jet travel, relying on diminishing fuel supplies, will be reserved for ocean crossing and local flights will be a thing of the past. People now start planning on building networks of high-speed trains that run on electricity. Infrastructures gear up to support the needed parts, and the prediction becomes true, not because it was truly inevitable, although it is a smart idea, but because people behaved as if it were true. It even works on a smaller scale, the scale of individuals. The basic methodology for all those self-help books out in the world is that if you modify your thinking that you are successful, money, career, dating, etc., then with the strengthening of that belief, you start to behave like a successful person. People begin to notice and start to treat you like a successful person. It is a reinforcement feedback loop, and you actually become successful by behaving as if you were. Maxwell, any thoughts on that? I guess that is like the law of attraction, sort of.
Actually, basically, yes.
Yeah.
Thinking about that makes me think about what I wanted to say with the just to go back on the Oedipus factor and the choice. Like I said, with the self-fulfilled prophecy, all the seer is probably mainly telling him is that your son will end up killing you. Now, as you had said earlier, think about it this way: if the father had loved his son, if anything, what could have happened is that the father could have lived a long life. Son could have at some point come to be old enough to become king, and while his father. The father may be dying from a sickness, and the son might kill him. That's more of a mercy.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Oh, man. That's very interesting thought. So it was.
And like I said, that can tie in with the whole pause, as you talked about, with the reinforcement feedback loop of thinking. So if the father thought more of a positive way.
So do you think either fates, prophets, or seers, or whatever, it's almost like they're testing the character and nature of a person? Whereas what they tell them is true, but they make them think it's a bad thing to test their character to see what they'll do. And if they kind of don't do it because it's the wrong thing to do, then it happens, but it happens in a good way, like you said.
Yeah, like I said, it's usually most of those kind of stories usually are trying to be a test of one's own moral compass and ethical, just basically ethical dilemmas all around.
So let's go over one more thing from Astronomy Trek. Are time paradoxes inevitable? The butterfly effect is a reference to chaos theory, where seemingly trivial changes can have huge cascade reactions over long periods of time. Consequently, the timeline corruption hypothesis states that time travel paradoxes are an unavoidable consequence of time travel, and even insignificant changes may be enough to alter history completely. In one story, a paleontologist, with the help of a time travel device, travels back to the Jurassic period to get photographs of Stegosaurus, Brachiosaurus, Ceratosaurus, and Allosaurus, among other dinosaurs. He knows he can't take samples, so he just takes magnificent pictures from the fixed platform that is positioned precisely to not change anything about the environment. His assistant is about to pick a long blade of grass, but he stops him and explains how nothing must change because of their presence. They finish what they are doing and return to the present, but everything is gone. They reappear in a wild world with no humans and no signs that they ever existed. They fall to the floor of their platform and the only man-made thing in the whole world and lament why we didn't change anything. And there on the heel of the scientist's shoe is a crushed butterfly. The butterfly effect is also a movie starring Ashton Kutcher as Evan Treborn and Amy Smart as Kaylee Miller, where a troubled man has had blackouts during his youth, later explained by him traveling back into his own past and taking charge of his younger body briefly. The movie explores the issue of changing the timeline and how unintended consequences can propagate. Yeah, we didn't talk about the butterfly effect movie. That was a really good movie. Have you seen that, Maxwell?
Yeah, I really liked it.
Sid?
I've seen parts, so I did want to see it.
To watch it. It's possibly, yeah, it's definitely in my top movies for best time travel movies. But you have to watch watch the theatrical version and then watch the director's cut right after and then watch all the alternate endings to get the complete experience.
All right.
Because it's wacky. It's wacky. Maxwell, have you seen the director's cut?
I don't think so.
I'm not gonna.
I remember liking the butterfly effect. It was kind of crazy.
Yeah, you have to watch the director's cut. It'll blow your mind. All right. So solutions. Scientists eager to avoid the paradoxes presented by time travel have come up with a number of ingenious ways in which to present a more consistent version of reality. Some of which have been touched upon here, including the solution. Time travel is impossible because of the very paradox it creates. Self-healing hypothesis. Successfully altering events in the past will set off another set of events which will cause the present to remain the same. The multiverse, or many worlds hypothesis, an alternate parallel universe or timeline is created each time an event is altered in the past. And the erased timeline hypothesis, a person traveling to the past would exist in the new timeline, but have their own timeline erased. So we talked about those as well. And the self-healing one we didn't quite touch upon in part one, so that's where whatever happens to either prevent an event or other things happen to equalize. So there's some kind of a homeostasis going on within the laws of the universe that we don't know about that mediate any kind of time travel damage.
Hmm. So I'm definitely coming over this part of the program. And the second part, we definitely covered over a little bit more on that. I feel.
So I'm sure Maxwell got a lot out of this podcast. Now he knows all what the paradoxes are and everything about them. Right, Maxwell?
I think Maxwell should be able to start a class now. That way for future.
I'll start courses.
We need to open up a time travel school. Mindshock University.
With Maxwell Powers.
Professor Maxwell. Oh, man. All right. So we hope you enjoyed another edition of the Mindshock podcast in our time travel series. Once again, if you like the podcast, feel free to donate to our PayPal. Make sure you subscribe to the channel. Like our Facebook page. Questions, comments, thoughts, leave them in the comments section. Feel free to share the podcast across social media platforms. Like our Facebook page. You can also check us out on Twitter, Reddit, Patreon. This is Bruce McGuire signing off.
And Maxwell Powers.
And Sid Irwin.
We'll see you guys next time.
Pretty cool.